Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Kevin Flynn, computer genius. Taken prisoner and held captive within the digital world of the computer itself.
In 1982, a story of life inside a computer grid called Tron broke new sci-fi ground. Not an easy concept for audiences to grasp at the time because very few people had computers yet, and everybody was busy watching E.T. that year. So Tron wasn't a blockbuster hit, but over the years it has become a cult classic, both by original fans of the film and sci-fi enthusiasts who agree there's just nothing quite like it. Ah, but fast forward 28 years, and we're just a couple weeks away from one of the most delayed and highly anticipated sequels ever, Tron Legacy.
Father Sam, and I'm very, very happy to see you.
Were you approached about Tron Legacy? Did you want to do this more than anything else in the world? I mean, well, how did you get?
Yeah, it wasn't Tron Legacy. It was, you know, at that point, it was just a property that Disney had. Sean Bailey, the producer, called me in for a meeting, and they were, you know, basically told me they've been trying to figure out what to do with this thing for 10 or 15 years. They didn't have a script. They didn't have a concept. They didn't have the title, you know, Tron Legacy yet. So he just said, I think I was kind of the first director he did. I think I was the only director he met with. He just said, what would your approach be? And, you know, I kind of laid out in broad strokes kind of what you see now, which is this embracing of the original aesthetic, but evolving it to something that felt appropriate for 2010. And, you know, I didn't want to make an internet movie. I didn't want to make a movie like The Matrix. I wanted the world of Tron to feel like Tron. I didn't want it to feel like our world, but I wanted it to be more visceral and realistic and photographic. And so I did a 3-minute test for the studio, which was kind of an audition for me of sorts, kind of showing him the tone, the look, a little hint of the narrative. I got Jeff Bridges to be in it, which was huge. And the studio dug it, and we convinced him to show it at Comic-Con just unannounced. And, you know, based on that one screening we did, the kind of response of the fans showed the studio that there was a desire to see, go back to this world, which was, you know, exactly what we hoped. And so now we're here.
This is just a game!
Not anymore.
By all accounts, the response at Comic-Con really exceeded expectations. Buzz about a Tron sequel spread online, and it became clear to studio execs that a lot of people really wanted this movie made.
Science fiction fans and fantasy fans are extremely loyal. They're loving. They love what they do. They're so into it. Very few other things in this business do have that kind of following. Look at Comic-Con in San Diego, where this thing was sort of, it was sprung on them. The reaction to it was on YouTube, and it was phenomenal.
But much like the real world, technology's evolved dramatically since Tron's story left off decades ago. In Tron Legacy, everyone's a lot older, and things have changed.
I was paged last night.
Oh, man, still rocking the pager, eh? Good for you.
Yeah, your dad once told me I had to sleep with it, and I still do. Page came from your dad's office at the arcade.
So?
That number's been disconnected for 20 years.
They've gone someplace with Incom that isn't particularly what the founders would have done. And I'm kind of stuck there. And I think there's a bit of a disillusioned man there who just is sort of walking through it. Where's his best friend? Where's his partner?
Good evening. Our lead story, Kevin Flynn, was reported missing. The visionary icon and Encom CEO skyrocketed to the top of the tech industry. He was last seen at home with his son, Sam, leaving behind an empire.
He's living with this mystery. And a young boy who's been left behind, who is kind of sort of a father figure too, a surrogate father.
I promised you that if I ever got any information about your dad, I'd tell you first, right?
But I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful approach for him at this time, now in his 50s, and still glimmering. He's walking around with an old 80s pager in his pocket, waiting for that page. And then he gets it.
The page comes from Kevin Flynn, thankfully still played by Jeff Bridges, who's been stuck in Tron's grid for a long, long time.
Long time. You have no idea.
But while human Flynn is obviously aged, his program counterpart, Clue, hasn't. So in order for Jeff Bridges to play both roles, the special effects team had their work cut out for them.
You'll all be wearing these next year. This is the latest style.
It's a completely digital head, but on a real body. You must have been proud of the way that that turned out.
Yeah, I am. But every morning I wake up knowing what the challenges of selling those shots, and each one of those shots has to be lovingly handcrafted to make it work. And we're using Jeff's performance to drive him, and the body double Reardon. We have to put those two things together and set him in the scene and make sure the lighting's working and the eye highlights are right. And, you know, everything's just quite right. And it takes a lot of craftsmanship to make each one of those shots. So,
Kevin Flynn, where are you now?
It's safe to say it's still keeping you up at night.
Yes. It's as hard as it gets, especially in 3D, to do these head replacement shots.
And soda pop.
Soda pop.
Right side. Left side. Eyebrows up. And neutral face. And cut mic.
Ready to rock.
In fact, nobody is more amazed with the finished product than original Tron director Steven Lisberger, now an executive producer on Tron Legacy.
We were scanning Jeff Bridges with a laser the other, you know, in the beginning in pre-production, and he would pop up on the game grid. And I said to everyone, do you realize that I made that up on the first movie? I had to get Flynn in the electronic world, so I thought, how am I going to do this? I know, we'll scan him with a laser.
Hey, 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 it's the big master control program everybody's been talking about.
And I said it was just something, you know, a story device, and it's literally come true.
It's creepy.
Yeah, it is. But it's supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be make you feel like, is this a good idea that, you know, computers can almost fool us and sometimes do fool us?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a human matrix.
Proceed to games.
Games. What am I supposed to do?
Survive.
The sets themselves are really, really great. You know, they're doing kind of a marriage between photorealistic computer-generated images and actual practical sets, and it's going to be very difficult for people to tell which is which. But the practical sets, where you get to walk on the set for the first day and see these things, it really gives you a sense of the world that you're in.
Where are you taking me?
Patience, Sam Flynn. All your questions will be answered soon.
So I'm guessing right here behind the velvet rope is about as close as I'm ever going to get to a light cycle. These, of course, are the really super cool motorcycles that they use in Tron to get around this way. And I have to say, the thing is pretty slick. But you can't park it in the city. I mean, where are you going to put this thing?
We worked a lot with those reflections, mm-hmm. and we have very subtle crease lines that every automotive designer works with. You know, this is where you get the quality in. And you have even subtle part lines work in certain angles, so there's a stance that the bike leans forward. And if you would pull back a little bit and go a little lower, you would see that this light line here starts connecting. These two points would start connect from certain angles, and even these parts would line up. So there was a lot of thinking, like, what would be the most common angles that they shoot it from, and mm-hmm. almost design it towards those angles.
So is it... more of like we're designing because it's going to look cool in the movie with the lights hidden in a certain way and less about the ergonomic quality.
Oh, there is so much ergonomics in that. I mean, we had to use digital scans of the actors. So this is obviously based on Garrett Hedlund's body. But as many digital scans you have, you sometimes have to sneak in with a tape measure.
Where do I find him?
Make it there alive, and he'll find you.
So this isn't off of any specific, like, concept BMW that you saw at an auto show or anything like that?
Well, I worked for car companies before. I'm a car designer, so okay. I quit my job to work on this film.
Oh, nice.
But you have to know that Sid Mead established a certain design language for the first movie, and he actually designed an exposed rider, like, back in the 80s, but they couldn't render it because computer power was so limited. Mm-hmm. So we kind of actually made his visions true. So there was a lot of reference to the first movie.
When you have to stay true to Tron, yeah. The 1982 version of Tron, where so much of what you can recreate was not available at the time, were there any instances where you went, oh gosh, I wish I could just let my creativity run wild and I've got this thing that I still need to adhere to?
For all of us designers, there was no better thing than going back to that movie. I saw it maybe 10 years ago for the first time. Uh-huh. But what inspired me much more is the artwork that was done for that film. So we watched the movie a lot of times, but the making of book and the original sketches that we had access to, they were so much more inspiring than the movie itself because they couldn't realize so many visions they actually had. So it made more sense to look at their visions other than as their compromised film result. But it's still an awesome film.
Obviously, you work in 3D modeling. What's your program of choice or programs?
It's a blend, and all of us work on different ones, and that's the big disaster in this business. I work in Alias Studio, which comes from the automotive world. Our effect house used Maya. There was a very good pipeline of that. We have others who model more in polygons because more more freestyle. And our production.
So it's software compatibility issues then that you guys have.
Oh my God, we are like Tron programs ourselves. It's a big disaster.
Yep, that sounds about right. But how about from the visual effects supervisor's point of view?
Is there something that sticks out to you as one of the most challenging scenes or one of the most challenging parts of the world to get right?
For me, it was the disc game sequence because, we start from this amazing, inspired artwork. And sometimes when you try to translate that from artwork to the big screen, some things don't work with the live action, so you have to try different things. And I had a really great team working really hard on that for months, and we finally came up with a look that I think we were happy with, and we showed it to Joe, and Joe was also very happy with, and that's ultimately what's in the film. And so I'm pretty proud of what the team was able to do there.
Make no mistake, Tron Legacy isn't all CG and 3D. For example, those costumes are the real deal, something Garrett Hedlund learns firsthand once his character Sam Flynn enters the grid.
Attention, program. You will receive an identity disc.
Was it the most uncomfortable thing in the world? I mean, how is shooting for hours and hours a day under lights wearing this stuff?
Well, it's a new experience. It's difficult when you compare it to, say, having a wardrobe like jeans and t-shirt for the whole shoot of a film. I mean, when you're doing a film like Tron and having this suit and it's 3/4-inch foam rubber, you're wearing a layer of Under Armour underneath, and anybody that's played sports knows what that is, and it just gets, it gets quite heated. So, I mean, in terms of that, it's a little more difficult. But for me, I like the things like this, I like the things that test you, because up until this point, say you'd had the space to kind of walk back and forth and take your time in between scenes, and you can sort of separate yourself and come back. But under these suits, you're under such monitoring because you can't really sit down and stretch and because we'll break the wires, so you're kind of constantly there, and it takes quite a few wardrobe people to maintain each suit, so there'd be 2 to 3 people looking after me and sort of always right there, sort of making just doing touch-ups, and there's always somebody around you, and it's so then you work you learn how to work under those elements, and then I think it's strengthening.
The suit was not merely a
sexy kitten cat suit. You know, it wasn't a black spandex thing. It felt like armor, and that's what I wanted it to be. I wanted her to be a warrior. You know, I used Joan of Arc as a major reference point for Cora.
Olivia Wilde plays Cora, Kevin Flynn's loyal right-hand program lady.
I'm Cora!
Who helps Sam figure things out in armor, you know, like Joan of Arc.
Turning around.
Not by choice. Their vehicles aren't designed to go off-grid. They'll malfunction on this terrain.
What about us?
Obviously not.
It was an honor to wear those suits. I mean, it's totally revolutionary what they did. Weaving electroluminescent lamps through rubber and neoprene has never been done before. It was exciting because we were well aware that all these guys working on the suits were geniuses and really working to make something special. They didn't have to do it this way. You know, they could have added it in CG. They could have just had tape and then added it later. And then what you would not have had was the amazing reflections of the lights and how... You know, we had one scene where Garrett and I are in a hallway and we're lit entirely by each other's lights. So that was what made it all worth it, was moments like that. It added to every element, I'd say, just wearing those suits and seeing the lights go on. And so you knew they were going to be difficult to wear because it had never been done before. And it restricted the way you moved and it changed the way you walked and the way you would fight. But we got better at it as the days went on and they got more comfortable and it didn't take quite as long to get into them. But I remember the last day I took off the suit, and it was really kind of amazing to look at it and realize that for the past 4.5 months, I've been able to wear this thing and to be a part of the sculpture.
No.
That was me.
That was like a 5-foot descent. You should be a stunt gal.
She had to do some amazing things to, you know, as far as the physicality of her role, you know, to get in shape for that and to get ready for that and do it. Not only it would be hard enough just to do it in, you know, normal clothes, but she has to do it in these suits that are all, you know, very tough to move around in, let alone, you know, do the leaps and the kicks.
We also had these helmets. It's a shame you didn't see that helmet more because it was built based on our bone structure. So everyone's helmet looked like a weird robotic kind of sculpture based on their face. And they were so beautiful. And you would just hold it in your hands and be like, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. You put it on, you couldn't see anything. But it was like this reverence for all the tools that were being made for the film. And every department really felt like they were doing something revolutionary. So I felt that there was this pride that permeated the set every day. And people were really excited. It wasn't another day on a movie set.
For these veterans. Did they keep the helmet?
No, I don't get to keep anything. But
special effects and costumes aside, it seems obvious that the success of Tron Legacy depends on how well its modern tech achieves what Tron couldn't back in 82, while still honoring and staying true to the original. Or in the words of diehard Tron fans, don't ruin our movie!
There had to have been a part of you who was like, oh, I wish I was still at the helm of this. This is a whole thing that's out of my control.
Well, you know, I have to say it. I personally find directing overrated.
Really?
Yeah, I do. Lisberger Studios in the old days, I got a great deal of satisfaction from having, you know, sort of our band. It was like a rock band. And we had worked with each other for years, and it was really that experience I enjoyed the most. And fortunately, in the case of the first film, you know, a lot of people that I'd worked with or knew or were friends, we all worked on the first film. And to see, you know, what happens in the when the hired director is, you know, the hired gun is brought in and a new team is put together on all of these films, I'm not that big a fan of that kind of approach. You know, secretly, I sort of long for the old studio days where it was like, wow, the films were made on the back lot of each of the studios.
You're a startup guy.
Yeah.
So you should come hang out with us in Silicon Valley.
Yeah,
I know a lot of guys like you.
I'm a startup guy. That's a good way to put it.
So when you look at the scope of making a movie like this, I mean, the manpower, the people that it takes just to be there, pushing buttons, the software, the servers, rendering time. How does that compare to your startup, Tron, in 1982?
It's so much more interactive. What you had back in the day of the first film, and it was part of the artistic animation vibe, which is people that liked planning where the plane was going to land before it even took off. That is animation. You know, you create the backgrounds over here, you create the characters over here, the color scheme is worked out over there, and you vector in from all these different areas, and that is sort of a big part of the artistic thrill, to see it come together that way, and to see how intensely interactive it is now, how live it is, you know, live feeds from the cameras. We didn't even have video playback. I mean, we rolled those 70mm cameras, and I said, yeah, I think we got it. And, you know, I saw dailies the next day, and, you know, I never saw a colored composited frame on the first film until we were halfway through shooting the movie. Let's face it, I'm a little bit of the, you know, the old Tron overlord, and you sort of don't want me in the light bike sidecar telling them which way to go.
Back in 82.
Yeah, exactly. You know, turn here, you know, slow down.
Video Game Warriors.
It's obviously dated to watch it now, but it's not like it was trying to be something else. It doesn't look like a failed attempt at being another sci-fi epic movie, you know what I mean? It was unique in its design, in its story, in its language, in its tone, and I was really impressed by that. I was also impressed by how many groundbreaking things they were doing and saying, like, for instance, saying words like bit and program at a time when the actors had no idea what that meant, or very vague idea.
So why now? Why is now the right time for Tron Legacy?
Only now could we make the sequel as groundbreaking as the original, and that's why I think it's great that they waited almost 30 years, because it took that long for technology to develop to a point where it could be as revolutionary. I think if you made this film 10 years ago, it wouldn't be as exciting as the first. But this one is an appropriate, you know, swing of time. The pendulum has swung back, and it's the right time to start asking the same questions about the philosophy of technology.
3, 2, 1, action!
Whoa, 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 whoa!
I'm a child of the digital age. You know, I grew up in the 80s on a, you know, Macintosh classic, you know, with Mac Paint and all that stuff. And, you know, it's like, that's our generation. There's a fluidity I think our generation has with the computer, a movie like this, you have to be totally comfortable with it, because it really is, you know, our set looked like, you know, NASA launch control some days with the amount of technology that we were combining. But you know, in the end, you're just trying to tell a great story, and with this movie, I think we're telling a story that couldn't be told up until now. So the time is right, I think, for a return to this world.